open. Catch, touchdown.
Stop it. Stop it. You can't do this. You can't escape. You can't make these plays. You can't make these throws.
Jacobs cutting back. Getting to the edge. Jacobs is in for the touchdown.
I just don't remember anybody doing what this young man has done so far in the league.
It's fourth down and one.
Welcome to Fourth and One. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. This is a post-championship parade edition, which is another first for the podcast. Hope everybody out there in Chiefs Kingdom has thawed out. I know Nick and I had a great view of the parade watching our 41 Action News coverage, but I would not say that it was a stress-free day for us. I would not say it was a day of celebration for us since we were back here, you know, working.
I do what I can do when I can do it. Okay? That's where I'm going to leave that at.
Let's get that put on a t-shirt with Nick Jacobs' face and me hugging him.
You will never hug me, ever.
Well, I could sneak attack hug you, but I feel like I'd end up in HR for that. Hey, I wanted to just take a quick minute. I know, how many times have you rewatched the Super Bowl at this point? Because I know you did your Jacob's Eye in the Sky, so I know there was at least one, and I believe you did Jacob's Eye in the Sky on two different days. So I'm guessing there's been multiple rewatchings.
Nope.
Are you at a dozen yet?
Nope, just once. Saw it live and watched Coach's film, so I'm good.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
How many times will you rewatch it between now and the start of training camp?
Probably won't. I've moved on at this point.
Oh, have you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, that was short-lived. I mean, I feel like it's been a lifetime building this moment, and then Nick's just like, I don't care anymore. Parade's over.
Well, parade ended it. It's time to move on. It's off-season time now.
No, it's almost Royal Spring Training time. Do you want to devote the A-block to Royal Spring Training and what we see as the projected rotation?
No, because this is a Chiefs podcast.
All right. Well, then how about if we... One thing I did want to do is go back and look at maybe some players who were overlooked that I thought had great performances or moments, maybe. Because everybody remembers the 3rd and 15. You know, everybody remembers, I think, Damian Williams bouncing outside for the touchdown that really iced it there. You know, there were some big moments there. But anything else that stands out to you? Any other players that stand out that haven't gotten enough credit, you think, for the performance they put in on Sunday?
I mean, he sort of did, but Sammy Watkins had a lot of really big moments that helped decide that game. So that he was a guy who really shined in that one.
Yeah, he was on my short list, too.
So, I mean, that was a guy that really shined. I mean, Terrell Suggs and Frank Clark did really, really good job at setting the edge. Some of the linebackers made it not look as good, but interior-wise, Pinnell did a good job. Nottie did a good job. Jones, he played his game, and he was disruptive.
I thought Tano Passanio, when they bounced him outside, did a good job setting the edge on several occasions, too. And like you said, I think sometimes the linebackers or Sorensen down in the box got washed out or got caught up in the wash, but they did their job in forcing the play back inside, funneling it to where it was supposed to go.
Yeah.
So the other guy that I thought really set a tone early on was Bashaud Breeland. I mean, he had the interception, but you posted on one of the Jacob's Eye in the Sky of him fighting off basically a horse collar hold from George Kittle to make a play. But there were other times he was getting blocked downfield and would come up and make big plays in big situations. I thought Bashaud Breeland had a pretty good game, and I haven't heard him a lot said about him. And in rewatching the game, Damian Williams was fantastic from start to finish, I thought.
Yeah, Damian Williams had a really strong postseason. He kind of really forced his way into making sure that he stayed on this roster
right,
in 2020. So, I mean, he made sure that he left no doubt that he can be a key contributor to this offense whenever he's healthy, and that he can be decisive. He had better vision there in the postseason than he did at times during the regular season. He looked explosive. He looked dynamic, and he had some elusiveness to him. So, I mean, all those things combined, I mean, he really tried to solidify his spot on the team in 2020, because there were times where during the season it didn't look like he was earning the opportunities that they had given him.
Yeah, and for those who don't remember, after Kareem Hunt was dismissed from the team last December, they signed Damian Williams to an extension and kind of said, hey, you're going to be our guy going forward. And then they felt comfortable enough to trade away Carlos Hyde in training camp, but quickly brought in LeSean McCoy. And then Damian Williams was struggling with some injuries and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden down the stretch, he really turned it on. Is that a product, do you think, of of just him finally being healthy, or do you think, you know, I mean, the do you think the contract also played into that, and knowing that he needed to show up if he wanted to give himself a little more stability?
I think part of it was it was the moment that they had worked towards and that they had trained for, and then also it kind of left no question about keeping him and maintaining him on the roster with the way he did in last year's postseason and then again in this year's postseason, and being the guy who clinched the Super Bowl with that run that he bounced outside on that off tackle one that kind of at minimum it solidified his legacy in Chiefs lore, basically, by having the game-winning touchdown. But on top of that, he's a guy that you want to bring back next year, and you're like, well, he earned every penny in the key moments that you needed him to, just like Sammy Watkins did. So both those guys showed up on the stage when they needed to where you ideally will potentially see him on the Chiefs, but if something were to happen, then they've made themselves a nice market next year to get a premium at their positions.
Yeah. Other thing, I thought it was a pretty well-officiated game. I don't know what you thought, but I thought they did a good job of letting the guys decide it on the field. There were a couple plays on both sides. Maybe you could call a hold, or maybe, you know, a little bit of hand fighting or stuff like that. But I really thought there were I can only think of one really critical call that maybe impacted, you know, a scoring play, and that was the offensive pass interference where Kittle pushed off not once but twice on Daniel Sorensen on a pass down the right sideline that would have gotten him into field goal range, and called that play, I think, correctly. But other than that, I thought the refs did a good job of not making themselves the story, which has been an issue since last year's NFC Championship game and even all season. Officiating and poor officiating had been a part of the NFL conversation, but I don't think it was on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job staying out of the way and make sure they didn't decide the game. I know 49ers fans are going to disagree with the push-off, but the reality is on that push-off that George Kittle had, it was, I mean, yes, they were hand-fighting, him and Sorensen were, but anytime a ref sees a player fully extend their arm and a safety shoulder go back like that, they're going to call that. That's one of the, just like linebackers look for certain keys and stuff that they're going to do, refs are looking at keys too. And when they see something like that to where the arm is fully extended and the corner and the safety shoulder has been turned like that, they're going to call a push off. So for George Kittle to not have that called on him, he'd already beaten Sorensen. It was a perfect throw. He just didn't need to extend his arm. So that's on him, and that's going to be one of those moments that the Niners are going to wonder what if for pretty much the rest of their lives.
But again, I also think the fact that not only did he push him once, but then he pushed him the second time even harder to get that separation. I think it was a correctly called. So, you know, anything else stand out to you? Because one play that I don't think, I mean, look, I think you and I agree the linebackers are who they thought we were, so to speak. Getting sideline to sideline, they were exposed with their ability on some of those stretch plays and stuff like that. But I actually thought Anthony Hitchens had a key moment in the game. If you remember, it was right after Patrick Mahomes' second interception. They had gotten a first down, and then they stuffed Mostert for a one-yard rush on first down. And then he came on a delayed A-gap blitz, and he didn't get there, but he really stuck it to Jimmy Garoppolo's ribs, and it forced the throw down the field to sail high. And from that point on, Garoppolo didn't look like the same guy. I think that hit that he took got into his head a little bit.
Well, I mean, the thing with Hitchens on that play is he didn't hesitate. Because normally when those guys are coming on a run fake like that, they may hesitate for a second so that they can decipher what is or isn't happening. And I'm never really a big fan of that. My thing is you just go. And you'll either hit the running back or you'll hit the quarterback, either or. So, I mean, that's kind of where he had that moment to where he showed no hesitation and was fearless at attacking downhill, which is where he can be best at whenever he's allowed to one gap like that.
Yeah, and then once they got to third down, you had the false start because Joe Staley was trying to get a jump on Frank Clark coming off the edge, and then as it turned out, it didn't matter on the third and long. Clark was able to flush Jimmy Garoppolo. They get the ball back, and as you know, the rest kind of history there, because that's when Mahomes went down, got the touchdown to Kelsey, and then, you know, the defense with another big stand, and then the two Damian Williams touchdowns to ice it, and that's all she wrote.
Yep.
And I did want to point out, I know you did this on on your Jacob's eye in the sky, but that touchdown run that Damian Williams had to ice it when he bounced it outside, Eric Fisher did his job kind of getting in the way, but Anthony Sherman sealing the inside edge and then the job Byron Pringle did on the outside blocking to kind of pop that open, that lane open for Damian Williams. You know, the 49ers got a lot of credit, deservedly so, for their schemes and stuff like that, but that was a thing of beauty to watch.
Well, I mean, here's where the bigger picture is on that one, is that when the Chiefs went to their hurry-up offense, they wore down that they wore down that 49ers defensive line so that they were gassed. I mean, because the reality is the 49ers, they have four to maybe five defensive linemen. They don't have a full rotation, so at some point they were going to wear down, and when the Chiefs went into hurry-up offense at that point, that was kind of the end of that pass rush mattered. For it to matter anymore, essentially. So the 49ers in the offseason, they're going to have to decide where do they get their defensive line to add to that rotation so that Bosa can stay fresh, so that Ford can stay fresh, so that the defensive tackles can stay fresh. And then they're going to have to make a really big decision about their quarterback. I don't think they'll make it this year, but I think they're going to be forced in the next couple of years to make the decision on Garoppolo, because personally, I don't believe Kyle Shanahan can win a Super Bowl with Garoppolo. I think he's going to continue to show himself as an average quarterback that is always going to have limitations. So that's what the 49ers are going to have to decide, and they're going to have to do it before their window closes.
Would you rather have him or Jared Goff? Those are the last two guys to get a team to the Super Bowl and then kind of show that, unlike Patrick Mahomes, unlike Tom Brady has shown at times in his career, they're good enough to get you there, but they're maybe not good enough to get you over the hump. Like, they're not good enough to, when the chips are down, go win it for you. Who would you rather have, Garoppolo or Jared Goff, if you were having to start a franchise with one of those two guys?
Neither.
So you're just going to go all Wildcat, like just Travis Kelce and the Wildcat?
That's fine. I'm not going to overpay for either one of them.
Yeah, but I put him in that class. I mean, I think, you know, obviously you've seen those guys have success in the regular season, but I think to get to that summit, you're right. I'm not sure that either one of those guys, unless it's a perfect storm situation, like the Baltimore Ravens, when their defense was just so dominant, and the run game was so dominant with Jamal Lewis, didn't really matter who was playing quarterback at that point, right? If you get in that situation, then maybe they can do that. Can the 49ers do that defensively?
They're going to have to add a whole second defensive line behind them, and linebacker-wise, they may need to get a little bit more dynamic for that to be a possibility, and they're going to need... And here's the bigger thing that NFL teams are going to try to take from the Chiefs now, and this is where you're going to have the new evolution in some regards, is the Chiefs are a track team. They'll beat you with speed at every single spot, and you better have speed to match it, or it doesn't matter. So a lot of the other NFL teams are going to start, 40 times are going to be more important now, especially at receiver, tight end, running back, and defensively, do you have speed guys who can match all that? So that's kind of the decision I think you're going to start seeing in the league going forward here, is are my linebackers on the outside capable of guarding Travis Kelce? Are they capable of running with him? Are they capable of running with Damian Williams? If they get isolated against Tyreek, is there at least enough speed to be able to match that? That's where the league is going to be headed. So the Chiefs are going to have to stay ahead of that curve this upcoming season. So they're going to have to add even more speed, and they're going to have to add some other things that we'll talk about in the coming weeks to be able to stay ahead if they want to reach the mountaintop again.
That's why Clemson linebacker Isaiah Simmons, who is from Olathe North, he's a local kid, but he's being projected as a top five, top 10 pick precisely because he is that new breed of linebacker. He's a little bit bigger than a safety, but he can run with everybody. He can make plays from the linebacker spot, and he can still come downhill against the run. I think that's where, you're right, that's where the league's heading, is those Isaiah Simmons types.
Yeah, the more Super Bowls that teams win with speed, the more people are going to evolve to that. And then on the other end of the spectrum, that's where the Kyle Shanahans of the world are going to try to counter with a more powerful run game.
And here's the good news if you're a Chiefs fan, though. But you know, looking at next-gen stats before the Super Bowl, the 49ers had the second-fastest defense, according to next-gen stats. So this was billed as a matchup of one of the best speed offenses versus one of the best speed defenses. At the end of the day, offense won and won going away. And so that, I think if you're a Chiefs fan, you can take heart in that, that as long as you got Andy Reid being the one pulling the strings and how they're using that speed, you feel pretty comfortable. I did want to also revisit one last thing with you before we wrap this up and move forward to the B block. I think there's this narrative that's developed that Patrick Mahomes is terrible for 3.5 quarters. I know in rewatching the game, he had 4 or 5 very uncharacteristic throws. You know, I mean, there were a couple on the first drive. There was one to Sammy Watkins there in the third quarter that was way behind him, basically thrown in the dirt. And then obviously the interception, you know, when Tyreek was kind of coming back on the dig and he threw it wide of the mark. I'm not sure that the tip ball was a little bit behind Tyreek, but I'm not sure I put that as one of the worst throws of Patrick Mahomes' career. But are you buying this idea that Mahomes was awful for 3.5 quarters? Because from what I saw, he wasn't maybe to the standard he has set for himself, but I didn't think that, you know, we were out there looking at the second coming of Tyler Thigpen or something.
I mean, what the reality is that the Niners were playing a lot of zone coverage with 7 guys and letting their 4 rush unless it was third down, then they may bring 5 from time to time. But they were keeping 2 deep to take away everything over top, and then they were keeping the rest there at the sticks or a little bit before the sticks level so that the Chiefs were going to have to take everything underneath. But the way some of the Chiefs are running some of their routes, they were needing time for these to develop and find the voids so that pass rush had plenty of time to get back there and collapse the pocket. So Patrick got a little uncomfortable in the pocket. And he moved around a couple times, and other times Duvernay had some struggles. Fisher is going to have struggles with guys who have a combination of speed and power.
Like Nick Bosa.
Which is what Nick Bosa, Khalil Mack, and Joey Bosa all have at times. So Fisher that's the combination he's going to struggle with, and there's 3 rushers in the league that fit that bill, so that's where he's going to have some issues at times. So for the Chiefs, their interior offensive line caused some issues for them, and that's something they're going to have to evaluate in the offseason to decide if they what they want to do with that. But teams are going to look at that, and they're going to, I mean, especially if you're the Raiders, the Chargers, and the Broncos, you have to ask yourself, what can we do with our pass rush and potentially zone coverage to be able to match what the 49ers did against the Chiefs and slow them down twice a year so we have a chance at the division? So the Chiefs are going to have to figure out how they want to evolve from that and be ahead of that curve before that happens if they want to get back to the Super Bowl like they talked about in the parade and after the game was over.
Are you surprised on that 3rd and 15? Because if I remember correctly, they were single high and playing everybody close to the sticks, but they didn't have those 2 guys deep. And ultimately, I think that's what cost them, because as Travis Kelce came across the field to the right seam, you know, Mahomes holds him with his eyes, and that allowed the corner route on the backside to be open to give that play time to develop. Are you surprised? As much success as they had, you know, with that shell that they've been playing most of the game, are you surprised they went away from it in that key moment?
Well, I think they thought the pass rush was going to get there in time to where they didn't have to defend as deep as that, so they weren't banking on that. Now, what the Chiefs called on that play with their 3-by-1 set is Kelce is designed to hold that safety with his vertical route, then Tyreek is supposed to also hold the safety in the coverage with his vertical route, and then Sammy Watkins runs a dig. There's about 10 or 15 yard dig there. What ended up happening is because that safety was banking on Tyreek running at him deep, that corner knew that thought that the safety was going to have him, so that corner drove on the dig route because he thought that he was going to go to Sammy and he could jump that pass and get an interception. So as soon as that happened, Tyreek ran his cut off of it to where that zone was vacated, and then he got in that spot right there and came up with that catch. And because of that, safety didn't have as quick a hips to be able to turn and rotate back towards it. It wasn't going to happen. And the Chiefs have actually run that play before. They ran that against the Patriots, I believe, to open up the 3rd quarter in the AFC Championship game the year before. So the Chiefs have had that play before. Peter King documented the name of the play and everything with the Wasp sting, I believe. So, I mean, it was a play that cost them, but in actuality, the key part of it was whenever Patrick dropped back almost 11 or 12 yards on his drop back to buy himself enough time so that rush couldn't get there so he could load up and throw it. If Tyreek had kept running, I think Patrick would have thrown a little bit further, but Patrick did that throw just off natural ability without really putting much into it body-wise.
And it will go down in Chiefs lore.
Yes.
All right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to kind of look at what this victory means for the Chiefs moving forward here on 4th and 1.
News, your home of the Chiefs. When winter weather strikes, it can make life difficult, sometimes even dangerous. Our job as meteorologists is to track everything going on around you, minute by minute, 24/7 on every screen.
Right now, we're tracking those icy road conditions.
This winter, trust us to bring you Kansas City's most accurate forecast, keeping you safe when it matters most. 41 Action News, Kansas City's weather leader.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, I do have some bad news coming out of the Super Bowl. The Chiefs were in line to be the number 29 pick in the NFL draft. Now they're going to be picking 32nd.
Wait, what? You're using numbers again.
Before the playoffs started, like if it had just based on the regular season, that they would have had the number 29 pick. But since the NFL reseeds the draft order or reevaluates the draft order as the postseason goes along, they slid all the way to number 32.
I'm going to be heartbroken over that, and I'm going to be heartbroken over the Chiefs having to give up that earlier or giving up that second round pick and the spot that they're going to give it up to the Seahawks from the 49ers or Chiefs pick, whichever the condition was on that. Can't remember if they keep the lower pick and they get the
The higher of the two picks. So they'll keep the 49ers' natural pick, but it's going to be only one pick difference at the end of the day. Because
I'm torn up about that.
So they're going to give up the 31st pick in the second round in the Frank Clark deal.
Very frustrating. It's going to be tough to swallow with that Super Bowl.
They did give up the first-round pick last year, though. But I don't think they have the parade without the new 5-5.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But people have constantly reminded us from the organization that was not offside.
Yeah.
That has become quite the theme.
That is so cold. And I thought it was hilarious, too, because...
It was hilarious that D4 disappeared in the Super Bowl?
No.
Parts of his career?
The official, if they had one major gaffe, it was saying that 55 was offsides when it was, in fact, Tano Passanio.
No.
And I saw people overreacting on Twitter like, ha-ha, Frank Clark. And I was like, you idiots, did you watch the play? It was 92 that was clearly offsides. I don't care what they announced. Like, do better, Pro Football Talk.
It'll be okay. We'll get through it.
I know. I got to be honest. Seeing the parade helped with that.
I'm glad. I'd be worried if we didn't have parade, what you'd have to do to resort to feel better.
So I think the biggest question of the offseason, other than can the Chiefs do it again, is what are they going to do with Patrick Mahomes, right? They can now negotiate an extension with Patrick Mahomes because he's finished 3 years of his 4-year rookie deal. Is there any chance at all they don't get a long-term deal done? Because the reason I ask is because there is a new CBA that will be coming up, I believe, after 2021. So, you know, there may be some incentive to kind of hold off and see what that is. I also think that probably means you're getting at most a 4-year deal. Maybe 5. But is there any chance that they don't extend Patrick Mahomes this offseason?
I guess it would be a definition of what you consider offseason. I think within the next year, I think something will potentially get done. What I do think it's going to come down to is what you previously mentioned from some of the people I've spoken with. Until the new CBA is done, there's probably going to be a waiting game for a lot of players that are under contract but potentially want more, because I think everybody wants to see what the cap is going to go up to. And a big thing that I've kind of heard through talking and chatting, have some conversations, is that depending what happens with that 17th game, if the players agree to that 17th game, and potentially if a playoff game gets added, that's what's going to help the salary cap revenue go up. And that's what's going to increase the revenue for the cap for players to be able to get what can see a steady increase. If that doesn't happen, I think the salary cap is going to begin to start to stay at a flat rate. So I think for some of the agents, they are going to want to wait, if their client is under contract, until that is potentially done, so that they can max out their value and know what the cap is and potentially projected to be during that time. So I think it's going to be a little bit more of a waiting game for contracts like that. In terms of Patrick, I'm expecting it to probably be a 5 or 6 year extension, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's not in the $35 to $40 million range.
Yeah, that's what I was
thinking. Per year.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Is if it's say 5-year, $200 million contract, right? Because one of the big questions is who's going to be the first $200 million man in the NFL. I think at some point it's going to be Patrick, but you know, if they do decide to push forward with something along those lines, I think what you'll probably see is some sort of soft out that would allow the teams to renegotiate. If he signs one sooner rather than later, some sort of soft out that would allow room to renegotiate once the new CBA is in place and they have a better idea of what those numbers are going to shake out at. Because that you can always come back and renegotiate the deal, kind of like what the Packers did with Aaron Rodgers, stuff like that, down the road if you want to add more money, restructure it, you know, to take advantage of some salary cap ideas, convert some of it to you know, bonuses or whatever. So I'm confident it's going to get done. I'm not at all worried that they're going to get into some sort of standoff where Patrick ends up being franchised or anything like that. I think something will get done. I think Patrick Mahomes wants to play under Andy Reid. I think the Chiefs obviously want to keep Patrick Mahomes in a Chiefs uniform. I think there's a lot of incentive to get it done on all sides at this point.
Well, and I think the bigger thing, if you're looking at it from Patrick's perspective, is he's making some money off endorsement deals, so he's not going to be hurting. Yeah. He's still got significant time on his rookie contract for the most part. He's still got essentially 2 years if they want to maintain that aspect of it. But if you're him, you want to keep your cap number at that level right now so the Chiefs organization has enough salary cap space to be able to add pieces so that you can get back to the Super Bowl like you talked about in some of your conversations, or the organization has talked about and when they've spoken publicly. So you want as much money out there as possible for the organization to spend, and then you can adjust accordingly on numbers however you see fit. And that could be something that maybe you don't really want to do until, one, after the CBA is done, and two, kind of more of in the fall type of thing, because at that point the cap, the players that are available and who you could add or what you add, that's kind of set in stone to where you can kind of have a low number in 2020 and start to in 2021 and so on. You can adjust that number accordingly, and so can the organization.
So my takeaway from that, if I'm hearing you correctly, is if Patrick Mahomes' extension isn't done before the season starts, it very well could be that a strategic decision by Patrick Mahomes' camp. So I don't want to hear people, if we get to August 31st and it's not done, just screaming bloody murder that Brett Veach is failing, because there's a lot of moving pieces here on both sides, the player side and the team side, that are going to factor into this. But ultimately, you and I both agree, a long-term deal gets done at some point, right?
Organization's not going to let Patrick go. Like, right. This is their golden goose. This is the guy that this organization has needed for a long time. This isn't like the Royals were going to sell pieces off. This organization has finally tasted the relevancy that they deserve and that they want, and it can only go up from here, especially if you have 15 as your quarterback for quite some time, and the guy who's going to be the new epicenter of the next era of football for this league.
Let me just ask you, how quickly does Andy Reid throw something at and or slam the door if Brett Veach walks in and says, "Hear me out. We have a trade offer on the table for Patrick Mahomes"?
Well, I don't think Brett Veach would ever say that to him or have that conversation. And just, you had the ultimate make believe story that I think would never happen.
I'm just saying, there's just no chance that Patrick Mahomes is in another uniform anytime in the foreseeable future. So
I don't anticipate that happening for quite some time.
All right, so what else does this win mean for the franchise? Because obviously, it had been a long time. I mean, we've already seen they're kind of raising ticket prices, and I know some people have been complaining about it, but a lot of people I've talked to have also pointed out, hey, they hadn't raised a lot of these ticket prices in several years. So in some way, maybe this is a market correction a little bit. But obviously, it's at the end of the day, the Chiefs are a business, and they're going to try to capitalize on the fact that they have the best player in the NFL, the most marketable player in the NFL. Oh, and they're the champions. So what else do you see, though, outside of a business perspective, this meaning? Because we kind of speculated after last year when Patrick Mahomes won the MVP that maybe as the legend of Patrick Mahomes grows, so might this idea that, hey, I want to go play with Patrick Mahomes, right? We saw Randy Moss, you know, toward the end of his career, wanted to go spend his latter years catching passes from Tom Brady. We saw that, you know, Antonio Brown, and I know that train wreck that it turned into a side, he wanted to try to find a way to New England where he could play with Tom Brady. There are people who either took sweetheart deals or went out of their way to try to find a way to be on that championship team and be part of that. Is there, now that the Lombardi wagon is hitched to Patrick, do you think that can happen here in Kansas City too?
Yeah, I think what the Chiefs did, I think a lot of players around the league see that as a sustainable thing and see that this team, it may need some adjustments and some additions here or there, but if you're hungry enough and you're trying to chase a ring rather than money, I think this is kind of one of your top landing spots now, because when you've looked at New England, that used to kind of be the spot people wanted to go to and were willing to take the discount for because of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. But with Tom Brady's status up in question and potentially possibility, maybe he goes to the Raiders, Chargers, maybe Titans, something of that nature, I don't think New England's got too much instability now. So at this point, I think a lot of players around the league who may get released that are kind of more past the age of 27 or older and have gotten that contract and want that ring and want that chance to play in some of those playoff games, I think they may be willing to be like, hey, I kind of want to go to Kansas City for a vet minimum. I've already made my money. I want that ring and solidify my legacy. So it'll be interesting to see what players get released in the offseason from their bigger contracts that they had already signed, and I'm kind of curious to see who's willing to take vet minimum to come to Kansas City and be good depth.
Well, and in the coming weeks, look, the Chiefs have some around 20 free agents coming up here. Some of them big names, obviously like Chris Jones. Some of them, I think the writing's been on the wall about LeSean McCoy's future with Kansas City the last couple months. When you saw that, I don't think it was load management toward the end. There's some obvious calls out there, I think. There's some tough calls they have to make. But in the coming weeks, we're going to go through all that, right? And we're going to go through all the salary cap implications of different guys and different moves and kind of what we see as smart strategy for the Chiefs. But I think safe to say that moving forward, especially whenever Patrick Mahomes' money kicks in, Brett Veach is going to have to earn his contract because it's going to be the draft. If you look at New England, the way they kept feeding the system, they didn't overpay to keep guys, not to keep very many guys other than Brady, as they aged into those, big time mega contracts. They were comfortable letting them go and bringing new guys in on rookie contracts. Do you think that's the smart strategy and the strategy the Chiefs are ultimately going to have to employ?
Here's the bigger strategy that I think isn't going to. I don't think people are going to see in the moment, but they may see down the road here, is the bigger thing you have to focus on as an organization right now is you have to decide these guys on the roster, who wants it? Who isn't satisfied with just one Super Bowl? Who isn't satisfied with just getting that big contract? Who isn't satisfied? Who's going to continually work every day, just like Patrick Mahomes works every day, just like Frank Clark works every day,
just like Tyrann Mathieu works every day,
just like Travis Kelce? How many more guys can we get like that who are going to go to that level and put in that type of effort? Because the challenge that the Chiefs are going to have going forward here is keeping the roster from being complacent. How many more people can you get that are going to work like those guys we mentioned versus how many will be complacent with the fact they're a Super Bowl champ and kind of live off that moment? And I'm not saying every guy's like that on this roster. I'm just saying that's what the organization has to decide. And is there somebody else we can get out there and put at each position group that's going to stay hungry and make sure that they're a leader in that position group and force everybody else to stay that hungry? Because I can tell you right now, Patrick Mahomes, he's not satisfied. He's not satisfied in any way, shape, or form. Like, I can promise you that. I guarantee you already. I have no doubt in my mind. He wants more Super Bowls than Brady has. I guarantee you. Yeah. Patrick wants to be considered, when his career is over, the best quarterback of all time. And the only way he knows, he's got a heck of a window right now to make that happen with Andy Reid. So he's going to try to get as many as he can with Andy Reid before the wheels potentially fall off on that aspect of it. So whenever you hear him talk like that, and some of those players talk like that, they want to be considered that next dynasty. That's the new goal. That's how you keep it fresh for a lot of those guys. And those guys, the fact that they're already saying it less than a week into winning the Super
right,
Bowl
exactly.
is a very, very good thing. That means that Patrick's going to be locked in here soon with that, and a lot of those other guys are. And the Frank Clarks and Tyrann Mathieu and Travis Kelce's and Patrick Mahomes of the world, guess what? They're going to make sure their teammates aren't like that. So the more players you can get that have that same mentality and that same obsessiveness with wanting greatness and tasting greatness and not being satisfied with it, that's how you're going to get to the road you want to go and to get to where you could be considered with the likes of the Cowboys or the Patriots or the 49ers during those eras.
Steelers in the 70s.
Yeah, and all those eras combined.
Right. That seems like a good place to break this B-block, man.
Sounds like a plan.
News, your home of the Chiefs.
When winter weather strikes, it can make life difficult, sometimes even dangerous. Our job as meteorologists is to track everything going on around you, minute by minute, 24/7, on every screen.
Right now, we're tracking those icy road conditions.
This winter, trust us to bring you Kansas City's most accurate forecast, keeping you safe when it matters most. 41 Action News, Kansas City's weather leader.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. This is the C block, but we failed and didn't do a check the tweet. So I promise we'll get back on that train here in the coming weeks as we move into the off season and start to look forward to the NFL draft combine and the opening of free agency and ahead of the draft, and then you've got rookie minicamp, then you got OTAs, and then we're all back at training camp right away, and we'll be with you here through it all to help you guys make sense of it and to help you guys understand maybe why some of the moves are being made and whether we like the way that the roster is taking shape, for a run at a Super Bowl repeat. And I got to be honest, coming off your rant in the B block, I've been telling people, you know, like family and friends about
a
this.
A rant would be yelling.
Well, it was rant adjacent at the very least. But when family and friends,
it was a distant cousin of the rant.
That's right. But when family and friends ask me about it, and they're like, "Oh man, you got to really enjoy this." And I'm like, "Yeah, I mean, you know, it's great, but like you, I see the potential for more." And I always tell my family, especially the ones on the East Coast, I got a lot of Jets fans and Giants fans in my family tree. I always tell them, I want, before Patrick Mahomes' career is over, for the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes to be as hated nationally as Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. Like I see that as being possible, and there's a part of me that just wants it. I want people to get so sick of the Chiefs going to the Super Bowl that they will celebrate with the few times that they're not in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it'll, I mean, a lot of things can happen between now and then, but based on the current information we have, there's certainly possibilities for the Chiefs to go the distance with this.
So one thing I do want to talk about, it, and we didn't. This is unscripted. You'll be shocked to learn that. you know, the Chiefs did announce their Derek Thomas MVP award and their Mackley Hill Award winner. For all the talk about Patrick Mahomes and all that, obviously he missed three games. I'm counting Denver as one of three games missed, because he basically missed that whole game. So Tyrann Mathieu, I think a lot of people just assumed it was going to be Mahomes, right? But Mathieu ends up being the team MVP this year. Do you like that? Are you comfortable with that? And why do you think the Chiefs viewed, coaches, staff, personnel as the most valuable guy on the team this year?
Tyrann made a big impact, and Patrick, I think you won that last year, or you won one of the awards last year. So, I mean, been there, done that.
He won the Derek Thomas Award, and I think the league gives an MVP award too. I'm pretty sure he won that one as well. Andrew Wiley was the Mackley Hill winner last year because it was technically Patrick's second season.
Yep. So been there, done that. So with Tyrann, I think the organization and the players noticed the impact that Tyrann had and what he was able to do on the defensive side of the ball, and how much that had been lacking on that side of the football. So I think the team wanted to know how respected he is in their organization, and I think that goes a long way with Tyrann, to be able to have coaches, players, people in the organization that vote on that be like, "Yeah, you're the dude. You're one of our favorites around here."
If you haven't already jumped on board the Honey Badger train, and don't already view him and his leadership in the same way that you do Patrick Mahomes, just take a look at the way that he approaches everything, whether it was Super Bowl media day, whether it was talking about his dad celebrating in prison in one of the tweets that he sent out. This is a guy who I think is incredibly easy to root for because he's made mistakes, and you can dredge up all that if you want. You know, he got kicked off LSU, for weed and stuff like that. And look, we all know all about it, but also look at the relationship he has with Les Miles. He's a guy who owns his mistakes. He's accountable for his mistakes. He learns from his mistakes, and he strives every day to get better. And you saw that. He's one of the guys I'm most happy for to see him get to, you know, just skipping down the street during the parade, getting to celebrate this moment. You know, him and Frank Clark, because if you know Frank Clark's backstory, these are guys who have taken control of the cards that were dealt to them, and some of them, frankly, were terrible cards, but they've taken ownership of it, and they've rewritten their own story in what I think is a pretty incredible way, and I think Kansas City's lucky to have these guys on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, in the way that I kind of see is like what you said, they fought for a new path, and they were relentless in that, and that's part of the reason, from a characteristic perspective, that's why those guys are leaders here, is because they had to fight for a new path versus the trajectory that people assumed they would be on with some of their situations. So both those guys learn from their experiences, and those experiences help them become who they are. And as Tyron tweeted on Thursday, Super Bowl champion. sorry, Matthew is how you'd like to be referred to from now on, I believe. So, those guys, those were huge, huge impacts that this organization got. And without them, and without the defensive coaching staff that they brought in, and really at the end of the day, when you go back to it, Clark Hunt said it best at the parade, Mark Donovan. He's a guy who's not going to get the credit that he deserves, but if Mark Donovan doesn't come here when he did to become the team president, and if I don't know if Andy Reid's here, and then I don't know if Brett Veach is here, and then I don't know if Patrick Mahomes is here. And as much as people love what the Chiefs have done with 65 toss power trap, Donovan brought in a guy named Rob Alberino, who Rob was kind of the guy who started that 65 TPT, and Rob helped create what the Chiefs became from a digital media perspective and helped start that thing up. He's with the 49ers now, and Rob, I've talked with him many a times over the years, and for people who don't know, I actually interviewed for the Chiefs insider job twice, and one of those times was with Rob Alberino. They called me and asked me to come in, so I did an interview with him, and Rob was a phenomenal guy. But Rob probably doesn't come here if Mark Donovan's not here.
Yeah.
And Andy, I don't know if Andy would have been here if Mark Donovan wouldn't have been the guy leading the charge. And then Brett Veach, and then it goes down to where Patrick Mahomes may not happen. This whole roster may not happen. So at the end of the day, a really unsung hero of this whole thing is Mark Donovan. And he deserves a ton of credit that I don't think people realize that he should be getting.
And Alan Wright. The equipment guy. That was one of my favorite tweets of the night was Alan Wright.
Yeah, no, it was so
getting to hold that Lombardi Trophy and congratulations to Alan and all those guys, because a lot of those guys, you know, the folks behind the scenes put in a lot of hours, a lot of time, a lot of effort, you know, and those of us who've been around the team some here and there through the years know some of those guys. We get familiar with some of those faces, and we know the work they put in, you know, what it means to them to be part of this. And for guys like Alan, they've been around forever.
Yeah, he's been there more than 3 decades.
Yeah, 37 years, I think.
He's been there through a lot of coaching changes, and he's been through a lot of years, man.
Yeah, he's seen his, you know, he was there in the 80s when they were terrible before Marty Schottenheimer got there. He was there as the Todd Haley experiment blew up. You know, I mean, you know, they've seen a lot of stuff. So congratulations to those guys, too.
Yeah, there's so many people in that organization. They could probably all tell all their own stories, but you got to be happy for every single one of them that they get that moment to everything that they've worked on, and whether it's in the business department or wherever, it all paid off for them.
And same with Chiefs fans, because I know a lot of you guys invest a lot of your time, a lot of your money, a lot of your energy in going to games and following the team and listening to podcasts, you know, and congratulations to you guys. Enjoy it. Before we go, last thing.
We got other off-season points, right?
Well, before we go, one last discussion point I wanted to talk about. We talked about the MVP. Mm-hmm. Mecole Hardman wins the Mackley Hill Award. Juan Thornhill, I thought, was every bit as deserving.
Yeah, I was surprised it wasn't Juan Thornhill, given
honestly
how huge of an impact he had on that defense. But, you know.
McColl was a Pro Bowler. He did play on special teams, and I think he was second on the team in touchdown receptions. So it's not like... It's not like it was a terrible decision. I just kind of thought Thornhill was going to be the guy to get it.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be the case, but hey, it is what it is.
Congratulations to McColl, and best wishes on a speedy recovery to Juan Thornhill.
Yeah, I saw him walking around there at the parade. So.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, that's a good sign.
It's not a bad sign, at least.
It's not terrible. But we got a couple other off-season points, right, that we're going to chat about there?
Yeah. You want to take the lead?
Okay. Well, the first thing we already kind of talked about, but I think it's still going to be the biggest thing, is when do the Chiefs pay Patrick Mahomes?
Yep.
I think that's going to decide some things cap-wise and how they have to structure that. And cap-wise, I mean, not just this year, but down the road, because then there's some other things you may have to structure in 2021, 22, 23. That's going to be, I think that's number one. Second thing, I think it's going to be Chris Jones' contract. Do you pay him? Do you franchise tag, trade him? What do you want to do in that regard? Because I think it's going to be really tough to pay two defensive linemen $100 million at that position group.
Right.
I feel like you can pay one big salary at each position group. I just don't think consistently you're going to be able to pay multiple top five, top 10 deals at the same position group.
Yeah, and you're already paying Frank Clark that deal in the linebacking group. For now, anyway, you've still got Anthony Hitchens.
And you're going to have to keep Hitchens.
Yeah,
for
Hitchens,
year
it's one contract. More year till you can get out from under it. And then obviously Tyrann Mathieu on the back end. And then when you look at, I mean, they've got some money invested in Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz, but they've also got a lot of money invested in right tackle Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. Right guard Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. Can't get out from under that one this year either. So for better or worse, you're rolling forward with him as your right tackle now, too, I think.
Right guard.
I keep saying the wrong one, but you know where LDT plays. And Will Shields, he is not. And you gave Tyreek Hill his money in the offseason. Kelsey's already got his money. Hmm. Running backs may be one place where you fudge it a little bit, but I don't think that's a place. I don't think teams are wise to invest in a big contract than a guy like Zeke Elliott or anymore these days. I think you, especially in Andy Reid's system, you can get away with guys on smaller deals. You don't need to pay someone $10 million a year at that position. So they've kind of already got those big money guys at the different positions set, I think.
Yeah, and then you're getting ready to pay the quarterback part, too.
Right, yeah.
And so you're going to have to decide.
And that's the most expensive one of all.
Right, and then so you're going to have to decide financially. If I don't pay as much at running back here, I can pay a little bit more at quarterback here. I can pay a little bit more at this position here or there. So, that's going to be an interesting part of the third thing that I think is going to be most important offensively, and I think it's going to be the third base priorities, interior offensive line. You got to, with what the 49ers did against you, teams are going to try to duplicate that, and they're going to try to get faster and copy some of that pass rush. So I think interior offensive line, I think that's something for the offense overall. If you're going to pay the big money to Patrick Mahomes, you got to protect him with a lot of stuff. So you're going to have to decide if you want to invest on that in the draft. Is there a couple free agents that can maybe make the price of what Stefan Wisniewski did? Where do you need to add depth on the offensive line? I think that's... Once you make that investment in Mahomes, you got to make a good investment in your offensive line, too, so that money with Mahomes never becomes something to where he takes significant injuries or gets a kneecap dislocated again or has anything of that nature.
And I apologize. On the Duvernay-Tardif, they could, if they wanted to take like a $4 million cap hit, I think they could get out from under that wanted to.
They get about five back if they move on from that. But that's a next week's discussion, Todd. Number four thing, I think they're going to have to start making some decisions at linebacker, because I was surprised during the postseason that the Texans and the Titans didn't take as much of advantage of the deficiencies in linebackers and play action pass and coverage that the 49ers took advantage of. And I think next year that's going to be one of the ways teams are going to attack the Chiefs if they don't fix that and figure out how to get more athletic at linebacker overall.
If I'm an opponent, I'm looking at that what Green Bay did with Aaron Jones in attacking the Chiefs linebackers, and I'm putting all those plays in the playbook for every time I line up against the Chiefs, unless they address the linebacker position.
Yeah, so that's why I think that's going to be a big one. And then finally, probably the final one that I think is going to be heavily discussed and we'll get more in depth about is going to be, or they're going to be corners that are going to come out and be available that are going to be able to fit your scheme that you can add on either as depth or potential starters that can compete with Charvarius and depending what you what happens with Breland.
Right, because he's on a one-year prove-it deal. So
yeah, so then you got to kind of make some decisions in that regard, and do you want to add to that position or not? Because see, here's the thing. The Chiefs coaching staff did a really, really good job this year of learning what this talent could do and then adjusting the scheme to the talent so that you couldn't see their deficiencies as the weeks went along. They became less and less because, for example, Reggie Ragland, he's a downhill, one-gap read attack linebacker. That's who he is. You send him out in coverage, it's not going to work out well. That's why he didn't play every single snap. Mm-hmm. If you
San Francisco caught him a couple times, though.
Yeah, so. And then with Hitchens is more of a one-gap attack guy, in my opinion. And then Damien Wilson, he's more of a one-tack a gap, in my opinion. So, I mean, they did a good job of letting those linebackers be more of that and just allow them to kind of have less overwhelmingness of the reads like Sutton's scheme had. So I thought they tailored the scheme more to what these guys were capable of and learned what they're capable of. And the thing that I told earlier in this podcast, earlier in the year, and I know I told you, and when people were upset about where this defense was weeks 1 through 6 and 7, as I told you, you won't know who this football team was till week 8. And it took till about then for you to find out what this football team was on both sides of the ball.
Maybe even week 10.
and in the rare occurrence, this is the first time because of Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid's play calling and the defensive coaching staff. This is the first time the Chiefs had deficiencies, and they still overcame those to win AFC Championship and Super Bowl. They didn't have to be a flawless football team like they had to be year after year before when we're coming up with these team needs that, well, they need this, this, and this, and if they don't have all these things, they're not going there. The Chiefs were able to overcome some of those things at linebacker and corner and interior offensive line and running back to win a Super Bowl.
And that's all coaching, in my opinion. Coaching and effort, dedication by the players to take coaching and then execute it on the field.
And then I think the final point here that we'll wrap up with on this, unless you got one, is does the coaching staff remain intact? Do you get to keep everybody from the defensive coaching staff? Do you get to keep Eric Bieniemy, or does some team finally say, you know what, now that the Super Bowl is over and I saw that, We might, you know, think about this Eric Bieniemy guy again. It's certainly possible. So I'm kind of curious to see if the coaching staff can remain intact and how everything handles on that side of the front office in that regard.
Yep. All right. I've got nothing to add. I think we've covered it. And
so, Todd, you want to tell them what we're going to do on next week's podcast?
Well, next week we're going to start to look at the Chiefs free agents. Who is out of contract, and whether the Chiefs should bring him back, whether they should only bring him back at the right price, what they should maybe do with Chris Jones, or guys that they're probably going to have to, either because of performance or because of money issues, walk away from. And that's how we'll kick off the offseason. And then the combine will be here before you know it, man.
End of February, about 3 weeks away, 3 or 4 weeks away from now. I didn't count it up on the calendar. I just know that it's at the end of February. Then free agency is just a couple
weeks. I think it actually starts 3 weeks from today as we tape on Thursday the 6th.
Well, it's like February 28th.
I think it's
27th to 28th is whenever I saw the press release for that.
Yep.
And then free agency will be a couple weeks after that. And then a month or month and a half after that will be the draft. And then rookie minicamp will be a couple weeks after that around Mother's Day. And then at the end
month later, you got OTAs.
End of March, OTA starts up. So, I mean, with the Chiefs having this long, exhaustive, memorable postseason, we haven't had as much time to dive in the offseason. We have less time to, you know, talk about hypotheticals. We had to focus on, you know, this whole Super Bowl thing.
So I guess the message is thank you, Chiefs, for not causing us to have to get too creative with the podcast during the last month because we still had games to talk about.
This is a very valid point.
All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you're looking forward to the off season, and hope you'll keep listening as we guide you through the transition toward trying to defend a Super Bowl for the first time in 50 years. Take care.
How about those Chiefs?